This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil, now streaming, only on Hulu.
All right, I really hope you're not getting tired of comic books this summer. You know I never do. And I promise we're not trying to turn this into a modern minorities comic book club, though that would be a pretty rad idea. But after last week's Adrian Tamine episode about his latest film Shortcomings, based on his 2007 graphic novel of the same name, we got lots of great comments, which reminded me that way back when, in 2020, Tamine released his second autobiographical work, The Loneliness of the Long Distance Cartoonist. Back then, friend of the pod, Ryan, and I reviewed it in the first year of our not-quite-a-hit podcast, Quarantine Comics. And for the first in what would become a trend, Ryan and I devolved the conversation from just being about the graphic novel itself to how the comic made us reflect on our own life. We can't recommend enough The Loneliness of the Long Distance Cartoonist by Adrian Tamine, so be sure to pick up a copy wherever you get your favorite books. And don't worry, Sharon and I will be back shortly with more than a few non-comics minority voices for all our majority ears. But I'm not making any promises. Enjoy this chat about Tamine's The Loneliness of the Long Distance Cartoonist.
Hey, Brian, you know what would be really cool?
Drinking a beer alone on a train speeding to nowhere.
Also, creating your own indie comic book.
I guess that'd be cool, too.
Just think about it. You get to pour your observations, not just your beer, about life onto the printed page. Probably shouldn't pour beer on a printed page. You know, you'd get to create a fan following. You'd make some sweet, sweet money.
I mean, yeah, we could do that. Or we could create a podcast, minus the, the sweet, sweet money and the fan following, I guess.
Think about it. You get to go on the road. You get to take your book on tour. You know, you might even become a beloved cover artist for The New Yorker.
That sounds pretty sweet, as long as they continue paying.
Yeah, but then what if your fans were fickle? You found yourself on the road all the time. No one ever showed up to see you. You found yourself couch surfing through your adult years. The critics were harsh and ultimately turned against you.
Oh my God, are you talking about this week's book?
You know me so well. So this week, we're reading 2020's The Loneliness of the Long Distance Cartoonist by famed indie artist turned New Yorker cover artist, Adrian Tamine, who I just learned how to pronounce his name correctly. No thanks to YouTube.
Hallelujah!
The book is a comedic memoir about fandom, fame, and other embarrassments, as someone else said, not me. So, The Loneliness of the Long Distance Cartoonist is a revealing comic autobiography that shows what happens when a childhood passion turns into a lifelong career, something my dad warned me against. I like the author, despite a seemingly charmed-sounding career, you eventually begin to sympathize and question if it was really all worthwhile. After all, in our own lives, don't we tend to focus on the many awkward, humiliating, disappointing moments that haunt us to this day?
Yeah.
Well, look, Tomine has actually always been one of my favorite, you know, modern illustrated storytellers. And I only discovered him through my wife's, like, growing stack of New Yorkers, which she is perpetually behind on. His covers just always have this haunting, simple kind of poignant quality. And then I eventually discovered that he actually made comic books, and I obsessively started getting everything of his from the library. And what I like is how he can kind of tell stories beyond these snapshots of life depicted. And even though I'm not a famous comic book creator, this book, there was just a lot I could relate to from my own career and life. The cringeworthy honesty it reflected. And he does it with all of his characters in general, but for him to turn the camera or the pen on himself was, I don't know, really revealing and fascinating. I couldn't put it down. What do you think, Ryan?
Adrian Tamine does feel kind of like the master of cringe when it comes to comics. I don't really know of anyone else who does it better or who makes you feel the humiliation of the narrator or the characters he's depicting. And of course, in Loneliness of the Long Distance Cartoonist, he's depicting himself and all of the different humiliations he feels from, you know, his days in elementary school to his days as a young cartoonist to his days as a seasoned professional and even as a father. What was actually really striking to me before we got on this podcast is that I kind of flipped through some of Tomine's earlier stuff, some of his stories from Summer Blonde, some of his stories from Killing and Dying. And what I've noticed is that even though that kind of cringe, that sort of moments of personal humiliation are so defined in most of his stories, he's a lot funnier and more lighthearted in The Loneliness of the Long Distance Cartoonist. It feels more like he's kind of looking at it from a more adult perspective. And as much as they might sting, he's almost kind of, I don't want to say he's laughing at it, but he doesn't seem as angry about it. And I wish I could kind of pinpoint like a specific example of how that works, but
well, no,
that's my general vibe.
Because he's telling his story, he gets the last word on it. Even if it is self-deprecating humor, like where he cries on his bed at the hotel room, yeah. It's just, he gets the last word because he's painting. You're in it for him. If you were going to pick this book up, you care about him as a writer. You wouldn't pick this book. I mean, maybe you'd pick this up book randomly, but you're on his side reading it.
We actually, you know what I think it is? In his earlier work, when something humiliating would happen, you wouldn't really know how the character to whom it's happening to turns out. It kind of ends almost in this moment of humiliation and kind of in their psychological depths. And here, you know, you kind of know at this point when Adrian Tomine is writing, he's like in his late 40s, you know, he's a father with two little girls, and he's an extremely successful cartoonist. So whatever humiliation he suffered as a young cartoonist, you know.
You already know how the story ends.
You know how it turns out. And so there is this element of, okay, I'm fine now, and I can kind of laugh at it. And the other thing also is that in a lot of ways, you know, the stakes are kind of lower for him because for him now, and this is sort of, I'm referencing the last story when he goes to the hospital and he writes that really heartfelt note to his daughters, daughter. Yeah. Where he's kind of thinking, you know, he's, I don't know if he's thinking whether being a cartoonist was worth it. I think there is an element to which the drive to be that big cartoonist isn't there anymore because he's kind of done it already. And now his focus is really on much more on his family. And so, you know, a lot of that uncertainty based around his career that he might have experienced in the beginning of, and that might have driven some of those early humiliations, you know, it kind of creates that sense of, hey, you know, we're over that. This is something that happened in the past.
He has perspective. And again, you know how the story ends. But I want to touch on that last story. So basically, as Ryan kind of said, at this point in the story, he's 40, he's self-actualized, he has kids, he has a job, he's a published best-selling author, and he feels a pain in his chest, and he goes to the emergency room. And he kind of has this moment where he's not sure if he's going to live. And in this kind of like self-paranoia, they literally have the thought balloons. He starts, you know, writing down a note to his daughters. This could be the last thing I tell them. And there's something in that moment, because I read it like two or three times. It sat with me all week. And you hear this all the time, right? From other people like Scott Galloway or others. It's like, look, when you're on your deathbed, it is not going to matter that you did one more PowerPoint presentation, that you did one more whatever. All that's going to matter is the people that loved you. And that's kind of what I took away from that. He talked about, you know, some of the best moments were just kind of doing the stupid things with you that made it worth it. And literally this week, I'm so fucking sap on this podcast sometimes, but literally this week, I was working at my computer, trying to cram in some work before dinner and putting my daughter to bed. And my daughter's like, hey, dad, come make a sandwich with me out of like these felt food things, or come play Legos with me. And I'm like, yeah, fuck this work stuff. I'm going to go play with you. That's more fun. And I don't know. I know that wasn't the takeaway of the book, but it's like the happy ending is that realization. The happy ending is none of this other shit matters.
Actually, yeah, when I was reading this, I was actually thinking about you because I think you're probably a little bit younger than Tomine at this stage, but you know, you have a young daughter, and here he's kind of addressing both his own mortality and thinking about how he wants to be remembered by his daughters because he's a little bit neurotic, a little bit of a hypochondriac, thinks he might be you know, in serious trouble. So yeah, so I was actually thinking about you when I was reading this because I was wondering how you would respond to it because this felt like something that would very, 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 very much touch you.
The best part, and as a newly married man, maybe you've had this experience yet, but like at the end, he goes home, he doesn't die, and he's sitting on the bed. You know, he comes back super late at night, and he just pours his heart out to his wife. And it's just like four pages of just like gut-wrenching. Maybe I haven't been as good as a husband, a father. I'm going to change, blah, 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 blah. And the last frame is, hey, are you even awake? Because she just slept through the whole damn thing. Actually, and then there's an epilogue, which is great as well, which is 20 minutes later, he can't sleep. So he goes and starts making this book. And I don't know if that's how it really happened, but just that moment of this person that you spend all of your time with, you pour your heart out to them and they've heard it before. They already know your neurosis before you even say it. And she's like, I'm tired. I'm going back to bed.
Adrian Tomine is a lot more tender, or he depicts relationships a lot more tenderly now than he used to. Even when they weren't his own, I was just kind of flipping through his last collection, Killing and Dying. And even there's still like those moments of humiliation, those moments of strife and conflict within these relationships. But in the end, they're more like the relationships tend to work. And there are also these moments of reconciliation that are actually quite sweet. And I actually haven't read, actually, that wasn't his last book. His last book was about, I think, the wedding planning, which I have not read. But I would imagine if you're writing a book about the wedding planning and the marriage is still, it continues afterwards, I would imagine it went okay.
I completely forgot about that. Yeah, it's good.
But you know, and then, but then I was kind of like flipping through Summer Blonde, that collection, and I forgot what was the book he did, right? Oh, Shortcomings. And in those books, you know, the relationships between people, and again, those people are younger. They're in their early 20s to late 20s. They don't know quite what they want, and they're lonely, and they're angry. And those relationships tend to fail due to, you know, some characters self-sabotage. The main character is self-sabotage. So it was just interesting to see that transition as he's depicting these relationships in his 20s, of characters in their 20s, to much more mature relationships where you're seeing people get settled and finding, you know, kind of having these moments of self-actualization and, you know, learning, kind of figuring out how to work things out, rather than in his earlier work, the characters are largely like floundering and angry.
I mean, to jump back to there's just some fantastic moments. I think that's what I love about him, either on a New Yorker cover, capturing a moment, or even the way he writes scenes is so good. I'm flipping back to like page 10, where, you know, after he's been completely made fun of for liking comic books as a little boy growing up in Fresno, California. And kid's like, hey, can I sit next to you? What comics do you read? And he just literally lifts Solace off like every Marvel title. And he's like, wait, I just opened up. Did the teacher force you to do this? And the kid's like, yeah. And scene. Just the cringiness, the relatability. Maybe I'm reading too much.
Did you have these moments when you were?
Of course.
When you were a kid?
Of course. I mean, I got really good at learning to hide it, though. You know, trying to hide my weirdness very early on.
I was kind of interested in Tomine as like just as a cartoonist here. And I remember last week when we were talking about Eleanor Davis, and, you know, we were both kind of freaking out about that story that takes place on a bus with the hands of God that appear kind of in the middle of it. But I remember just thinking, you know, how I loved how sparse each panel was, even though it was small and very kind of sparsely illustrated, how much story it packed in there in each panel. And I feel like Tomine is kind of, you know, doing sort of the same thing here. Like his storytelling is so effortless, you know, here. It's sort of like there's each line is sort of well thought out.
It's infuriating. It's infuriating how good he is. Cause even like the expressions are so plain and like just small tweaks to someone's eyebrows or mouth.
Oh, yeah.
And just so much is communicated in so little. It's so infuriating, like, how good he is at this, like, minimalistic style.
Well, you know, like, did you ever read Optic Nerve? That was his first, was just kind of self-publishing. And that was when he was, like, really young, like, in his 20s. I don't know how old he was. But it's just interesting just seeing how, like, the Optic Nerve strips almost feel like just kind of scribbles compared to, you know, how refined he is now and how much he's sort of like mastered his craft.
You know, it's interesting about that Optic Nerve. So, you know, like I said, a few years ago, I went on in a Tomine binge and I discovered, had a recollection of, you know, when I was in college, in some magazine, be it Spin or Rolling Stone or some shitty like college fanzine for 20-year-olds, there was a cartoon that I tore out and I put up on my wall about this awkward kid meeting a girl and she was into comics, but he didn't work up the nerve to talk to her about it. And then I was going back, and it might have been Optic Nerve. I was reading Optic Nerve. I was like, holy shit, I read this exact strip and I found it. And so yeah, my exposure to Tomine was when we were both in our 20s. Him writing stuff for indie fanzines and me tearing it out and putting it on my college dorm wall. So I just had to say that.
Well, okay, so you've read Tomine pretty much from your 20s to your 40s, which is sort of like that kind of encompasses almost his entire career.
I accidentally discovered a comic strip of his, not knowing who he was, not caring, just thinking it was some, you know, indie artist who wrote a thing. I tore it out, I put it on my wall for most of college. Then fast forward, you know, 10 plus years later, my then girlfriend, now wife, is reading The New Yorker and showing me these covers. And I'm like, wow, this is really good. And still not knowing who he was, but, you know, after a while, you start to recognize the artist from The New Yorker. And I don't know where it was. I think it might have been at some like street book sale in Brooklyn. Either he was there or his book publisher was there with stuff. And I bought a box of postcards of his, not realizing they were about comic books. And then lo and behold, I got everything of his from the library in one go.
So two questions there. Yeah. First, what was the comic that you ended up putting on your wall? Do you remember what it was about and why it resonated with you?
Yeah, it was a nerdy kid who sees a girl that's cute. Who must be wearing a t-shirt. And again, what he does so well, and what I usually hate in comic books, is when he shows either literally or just kind of the thought balloons, what's going on inside of the protagonist's head, the internal neuroses, it almost like escalates the cringeworthiness of everything he does. And it's relatable.
That's actually like what he does so well, is showing the character's interiority without really being explicit about it. He's able to suggest it oftentimes with their facial expressions, with just, as you mentioned, I think earlier, just kind of like, you know, a flick of the eyebrow or something like that. And yeah, right. That is so hard to do, because when you think about most superhero comics, the emotions are really, really heightened, right? And there's usually thought balloons or some sort of caption that explains how the character is just feeling. And then there's some sort of dramatic shot of, you know, somebody crying.
Or a pose.
And Tomine's like really good at just very subtly suggesting, you know, like a twinge of emotion, or even sometimes often multiple conflicting emotions that's kind of going through a character, usually based off of some recent fresh humiliation.
Yeah. It's something we've said before. When they make it look easy, you know it's not easy. You know it's a craft. And I could be wrong. Maybe it is easy for him. Maybe it's not as intentional. But you can tell it's easy for him, but there's a very intentionality about how pages are laid out, what few details are in there, sound effects, you know, sweat lines, etc. He talks about that a little when he's instructing the kids at his kid's school, right? When he's giving them the art lesson. Mm. He's clearly aware of all these mechanics. He's read Scott McCloud, or he has studied the craft and gotten better at it, for sure.
That's actually kind of one of my favorite things with Tomine, especially in this collection, is that sort of disconnect between what he thinks is happening versus, or what he thinks is happening or what he expects to happen versus what actually happens, which is usually like the polar opposite in terms of what he wants. You know, the cartoonist example being a great one, when he goes to his kid's class and says, I'm a cartoonist. Oh, like Disney or something. It's no, adult cartoons. And he kind of gives this great lesson on how to draw, but he draws like poop. And then that kind of elicits and the kids are loving it, but that elicits a complaint. And he's like, okay.
Oh yeah, a letter gets written to all of the teachers. So good.
But even when he's like, when he's, you know, a young cartoonist and he's getting an award, I mean, he's like on
Frank Miller.
Yeah, and he meets Frank. Frank Miller's about to announce him, and Frank Miller doesn't even know what his name is.
It's not as bad as like an episode of Curb Your Enthusiasm, where like you have to cringe for 5 episodes before you start to savor it. And maybe it's just the delivery vehicle of these like the simple line art with these just kind of very plain looking characters. You know, they have expressions.
Yeah,
I don't cringe as hard when I read this. Maybe because you are removed from it, and that's. That's the you can move to the next panel very quickly and find out what happens next.
Well, yeah, that's definitely true. You can kind of like pace yourself. Like, you ever watch Peep Show?
No.
It's a British comedy. It's about two really horrible roommates. I highly recommend it, but to me, that is like the epitome of cringe humor. Because there were actually times when I would actually hit pause and just have to kind of like wait it out. Because something horrible I know is going to happen. And I feel like, you know, with comics, obviously you can kind of just stop reading for a little bit. I mean, that's essentially the equivalent of hitting pause. But, you know, I think also, you know, in this collection in particular, a lot of the humiliations that happen are so, what's the word? They're so compacted, I suppose, because each strip, it's only about, you know, 2 or 3, 4 pages. They don't go on for that long versus in stuff like Summer Blonde or even like Shortcomings, right? I mean, Shortcomings is a whole graphic novel. So you're just kind of exposed to, you know, one thing after another in quick succession for these guys. And you're just like, oh, Jesus Christ, man, this is getting worse and worse. You don't kind of have that buildup where you just that feeling of dread. As the story gets drawn out, it's a lot more compact. And because it's a lot more compact, it almost feels a lot more comedic, especially as we mentioned earlier. We know how Tomine ultimately ended up, that he is an ultra successful cartoonist.
Who gets to make books like this. And, you know, it's worth saying some of his humiliations as we kind of go through these stories, they're with his idols. Like Frank Miller, can't pronounce his name. Neil Gaiman, he, you know, people are like, wait, you're not Neil Gaiman? Terry Gross. Like just, and there, I can't remember the name of the older artist who comes over and thinks he's just kind of like the computer technician. Like,
I think it's Terry Zwigoff, the director. I think it doesn't look like him, but so a lot of these characters who humiliate him, they're blacked out, but I think he kind of blacked it out afterwards because you can kind of read through the lines sometimes. So I was trying to figure out who this guy was. So, you know, in this episode, in this issue, in this sequence where somebody comes over, thinks Adrian Tomine is hanging out with his cartoonist friends. This guy thinks he's tech support. I think it's Terry Zwigoff, who is a director he directed Crumb, autobiography of R. Crumb, and then the documentary about R. Crumb. And then he's the guy who directed Ghost World by Dan Klaus.
But it's just this idea of, that his job is so sweet. He gets to meet all of his idols and rub elbows with them, and they think he's tech support. Like, just
how often do you have imposter syndrome? Do you get it still?
Yes and no. Here's what I'd say. It's the imposter syndrome. It's the keeping up with the Joneses kind of mentality, wanting to be something that you're not, and it's a daily practice, maybe not a daily anymore, but a monthly practice that I have to take myself out of it and say, yeah, I actually don't give a shit about it. And that's why the final note with his daughter just really resonated. At the end of the day, this other shit just doesn't matter. At the end of the day, all that matters is putting your head down, doing the work, but then also putting your head up and getting out of the work, if that makes sense. Like, I don't need to make all the money in the world. I don't need to win an award. I don't, blah, 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 blah. I can put myself into the things that I care the most about. I mean, honestly, this podcast, it's one of those things. Like, we realized, what was it? About a month ago when we were working on the next episodes that we want to do. It's like, wow, we put our head down and did 25 of these. And maybe no one other than Auntie Pinky, hi, Auntie Pinky, is listening. But it doesn't matter because we made something that we're proud of that we like. And I had a good time with my friend. Like, this, it's so funny about this work project. This isn't a PowerPoint. 20 years from now, I'll be like, oh yeah, there was that year or two where my buddy Ryan and I, we just talked about comics every week. And here we literally have a body of work from it. Yeah.
Well, you mentioned, you know, you don't need a lot of money. You don't need an award. But I just, you know, put it out there. It would be nice to have both. Not going to complain if it happens. I also want to say,
you know, would you rather have money from this podcast, or would you rather win an award for this podcast?
Money.
you want to be rich, not famous, right?
I don't care about fame. I mean, the worst thing, you know, fame is. Well, no, I would imagine it would be awful because, like, then you have to, you know, we live in this world where everyone's monitoring you 24/7. You say the wrong thing, you have to spend the next 48 hours eating shit and apologizing. No, I'd rather just be like rich and anonymous.
I want to flip the career question on you. You're a guy who writes and wants to draw for a living, and that, you know, to sell books and to make money from art, you kind of have to have fame, don't you?
Yeah. Just talking to a lot of my friends who were, you know, putting their books out, you know, there was a lot of questions of, well, do you have a platform? So they expect the author to come in with some sort of fan following before they're willing to take a bet on you. I think that's kind of horrible. I mean, I understand that that's the way it is today, but it's sort of like a horrible situation because for a lot of people, their goal isn't to be a marketer, you know, but you kind of have to
build
to be
a brand.
One.
Yeah, right.
You literally have to be one. And I kind of hate the situation we're in right now where everyone has to be a brand. Everyone, I just, you know what? We have too many goddamn brands out there. I just, you know, wish people would, you know, shut the hell up for a little bit, says the guy who has a podcast.
Well, you know, it is and it isn't. Like, to me, it's about do the work, prove that you can do the work. So, you know, I'm working with our friend Chris Walker on a comic book company right now as a freelance gig. And all that matters at the end of the day, and we've been having these conversations with investors and brands and sponsors, is none of that matters. I keep telling him, it's like, we got to make the book, make sure the book is good, and get it out. Because then it's, we can prove to the world, and I'm like, we're obsessing over the quality of the product before we print it or put it up on Amazon, because this thing might catch fire later, but it's like, let's do the best we can to make the product as good as it is. And once the product's done, yeah, throw on all the other marketing and sales. But if you have all marketing, you're all style and not substance. And even with this podcast, like, you know, we have a routine where we, you know, select books, we think about it a little, we write some stupid copy, and we devolve the conversation to something else, right? About society, yeah, or ourselves. But we're doing the work. And again, I kind of don't, with this one, because I like reading comics and I like talking to you, I don't care with this one. I really don't. We're not going to change the world, but if someone wants to hear about Tomine and what he means to us, here's a pretty good piece of work. Actually, this one's pretty much hot garbage. It's devolved.
Well, you were talking about the product being the best it can be. That's the other thing. I think like a lot of people who write or draw, I mean, there are people out there who view their work as a product, but there are a lot of people who don't, and they kind of like, you know, they kind of torture themselves over it. They don't think of it as something that they obviously want readers, but they don't think of it as a product to be marketed. There's, you know, when I used to, you know, freelance for Publishers Weekly, and I would write, you know, features for about the publishing world. And what struck me is that the writers who made a living doing what, you know, just writing fiction or whatever for a living, which is really hard to do, they actually did view their work as a product. They viewed themselves as marketers, as businessmen and businesswomen, you know, knowing that they had to keep the fan following interested and had to pump out a book every month. And because of that, you know, I think they did tend to view it as like, I got to put this thing out. I got to keep people happy. And that's one way of approaching, you know, writing. And on the other hand, you kind of have the stereotypical tortured artist who's doing it because they've got something to say. And this is, you know, the way that they communicate. But the flip side is they're not going to be particularly prolific, usually.
We can't all be Neil Gaiman, you know?
It's a spectrum, right? And then there are the people who can kind of put out really interesting artistic work, unusual stuff, at a very, very frequent basis. I mean, like Neil Gaiman, you know, kind of being one of them. I mean, so it's a spectrum, I think.
Yeah, but for the rest of us, this is going to sound terrible, it's a numbers game. It's the kind of classic 10,000 hours thing. So it's maybe only 10% of your work's going to be good. But if you only make 10 things, that means only 1%, one thing is going to be good. But if you make 100 things, 10 things are going to be good. That takes a lot more work, and you got to put a lot more garbage out there, but you'll have 10 good things versus one.
I wonder how much of all that we're going to cut out.
If left up to you, you'll cut the whole thing. If me, I'll just, you know, I'll trim it. this past conversation for the last 5 minutes is like the good stuff 20 years from now. Maybe not for the review of Tomine, but here's what I would say. If you want to comfortably cringe, you should read this book. Or you should read any of his works. And chances are, Andy Pinky, you've seen his work if you read The New Yorker. And I know you do read The New Yorker. I'm guessing. You seem like...
Oh, Andy Pinky's the one who introduced me to Adrian Tomine. She's the one who got me Optic Nerve. So until then, if you've got a recommendation, commendation, or complaint, be sure to email us at qtdcomics@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.
And that's our show.
Like what you heard? Please subscribe, leave a review, and a 5-star rating on your favorite podcasting platform.
Now more than ever, people need to be hearing these stories. Please share our show with a friend or three.
Want to learn more or got something to share? Visit modmypod.com or email us, hi mom@modmypod.com.
You can also follow us on Instagram and Twitter @modminpod. We'd love to hear from you.
That's it for now. I've been Ramin Segal.
And I'm still Sharon Lee Tony.
Remember, we're all modern minorities out there.
We'll talk to you soon.
Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.